Okay, so I'm going to do a reenactment. So it starts like this. The reenactment is when I came to look at this work, really to like look at it the first time. So I was around here, and I said, "What are these paintings made out of? What are they of? From back here, it looks like they could be clouds." And then I went closer, and I thought, I don't know, maybe they're not clouds. And then I got up here and I was like, I'm not sure if these are clouds or not. But I did start paying attention to like, what is this made out of? How is it made? Is it a painting? It's like, it's on canvas, but I don't think it's paint. Is it a print? It seems like it could be a print, but then I thought, is it a photograph? And then I thought, it could be a photograph. But then I thought, I'm going to look from it back here again. So then I walked back here, and then I saw this, and I was like, is that the same material as that? And I couldn't tell. It seems like it's very possible that it's the same material. And then I got closer to this, and I thought, I don't know if this is metal hanging on the wall, but it seems like it could be metal hanging on the wall. And I kept walking back and forth between these two pieces, looking at this and trying to figure out if it was the same material. And then I noticed that something was happening right here, that there's also sound. And I went back over here again. And I thought, when I walk around, the sound is changing. And I looked at these again and I thought, I think they're clouds. And then I saw this and I said, I think this looks like sun shining through clouds. And then I thought, I bet if those were windows, that's because we're on the fifth floor, that it's possible that that's what I would be seeing through the windows. So then I went outside. And I lost half of the audience. And then I thought, I think that's possible. If those were windows, if these other buildings weren't here, if there were windows in those other buildings that were the same size, that you would look down out onto the bay and it's possible you would have a similar kind of cloudscape. And then I decided that that was possible and I went back in to look at the art some more. So that's what I did when I first looked at this word closely to see what was happening in there. And then I started with these two pieces. And so I'm just going to talk about these as I saw them, right? Like, I'm looking at them and what's happening. What's there? So they clearly are cloudscapes, right? Which made me think about cloudscapes as in the tradition of painting. So the first guy I thought about was Turner. And I thought about the work at the Tate, London, where you can see a ton of like the Turners, and there's one room, and they're just like pretty much cloudscapes. There's no ground, there's no vault of the sky, it's just like a cloud mist. And you really start thinking about how like the origins of abstraction and that, and the idea of like the cloud as an attraction for abstraction. So I started thinking about that with these. And then I found out some stuff later on that actually Roberta Smith had written this piece in the New York Times in 1999 about Turner and his relationship to, or his influence on like Frankenthaler and a second wave abstract expressionists, right? So there's another interesting thing about this painting was the technology that's like bringing it into existence, right? So there's like, it feels at times that this painting has facture, right? That there's a hand in it. But especially from back here, it has an expressionistic quality, right? And then you move closer, and it still kind of is there, but it shifts into not being any longer the hand, the expression of the hand, but it almost seems like it's mimicking, the hand is mimicking technology, but then it kind of flips back and forth between seeming as if it really is just pure kind of technology reprocessed, remediated. So there's all these formal ambiguities that start to appear. And also, is it a painting? Is it a print? Is it a photograph? Those keep flipping back and forth for me. So I think what that ambiguity does is it starts to promote inquiry and speculation, right? Like, you start to try and figure out, like, what this, just like on the most basic formal level, like, what is this thing? How is it made? And that starts, you start thinking. You start asking questions and you start speculating, right? And so that was one thing. I also thought of this as a symbol, right? Like a cloud. What is a cloud? Is something that is not fixed. It's form. It has form and it's formless simultaneously. And that was also another kind of interesting ambiguity to me, right? Another way in which this thing is representing something that's unfixed. Like I talked about, we went outside. I thought of them as trompe l'oeil, right? As like representing windows that go out there. You could imagine that as we did. And then through this gallery space then starts to become connected to outside. Or it set that in motion for me. Like that this space, these works, what I'm dealing with, what I'm looking at, what I'm thinking about, is now also connected to some possibility out there. Not just representationally, but also symbolically, right, as a cloud, as an out there, like it's out there. Actually, and then I asked Kamau about this, because I'm friends with Kamau. And he gave me an awesome quote, which he said, I have an interest in using the space as a given asset. The room has a horizon. I see no need to reestablish the horizon through illusion. And that was interesting to me, especially because I was feeling that in here before I talked to him, right? This idea of horizon. And it made me think about Paul Virilio, who in his book Open Sky, in the introduction, he says this about horizons. When he's talking about the loss of horizon, right? That we're like, we're in the cyber cloud all the time now, right? A lot of us, anyway, here in this town, especially. And I think there's another relation too, right? Like technology and the cloud, like the cloud, right? The iCloud. So Virilio's talking about like the loss of that, because we're there, right? We're in that cyber cloud quite a bit. So he says, without a distant horizon, there is no longer any possibility of glimpsing reality. We drop into the time of a fall akin to that of fallen angels, and the earth's horizon then becomes just another bay of angels. So that was another thing that came up for me looking at this. The image then is, it's destabilized, not just unfixed, right? But it's like, destabilized and unfixed, it's synonymous, but what I mean by destabilized is like, you can't find a horizon with it, right? Like, the way it's cropped, there is no horizon. It's leaving you without a ground and without a vault, and you can't get a sense of even like a distant like sky horizon. There's no, if you're above Earth, right, there's no horizon. So I think all these observations, the representational ambiguity, the formal ambiguity, the conceptual ambiguity, I started thinking, like, what is this telling us about this work? What I think it's telling us is to ask questions. It's inviting us. This is the way that, like, that thing there hanging on the wall that's paper, which seems like it could be also the same material as that there, the sound. You start, as you move around in here, you start, like, it starts generating more questions. It's offering that you make inquiry. It's an invitation to investigate and ask questions. And that does a few interesting things to me in a public space. The first thing is it generates inner subjectivity. So inner subjectivity, most simply, is the sharing of subjective states by two or more individuals, right? The more complex idea about inner subjectivity is that it's referring to common sense shared meanings that are constructed by people in their interactions with each other and used as a way to interpret the meaning of elements in social life. So when I was in here doing this, thinking about these things, looking at this work and thinking about it in this way, a guy came up to me and was like, "What are you writing?" That's what I'm talking about. Then we started talking. We started talking about this. We started talking about what I was writing. He was totally feeling this work. And I think because I was doing it too, right, something started happening. Then I'm in a relationship with him in this space about these questions. So that's interesting and good, right? The other thing that I think it does is something that I've been talking about and mentioned a few times, is like the unfixed. So the questions generated by the unfixed nature of the paintings start to move you through the piece as a whole, like I acted out right in that beginning thing. I moved over there. This is unfixed. Are other things unfixed? Is there a relationship? Is this unfixed to a certain point and other things have relationships that make that I can find out how this is more something that I might know about? So you start to, like, it starts to build on itself. So this, it puts you in a dialogue or engages you with the work as a whole, like the whole, all this work as a whole, like all the work as a whole, and also the space as a whole, which I think is what one of the things that Kamau wanted to happen most from my conversations with him was that this space become like the object. So through the process of asking these questions, like the things, but like an unfixed object, right? Like the sound is an object. These things are objects like autonomously. But as you start to like move through the space and ask questions, and I think there's even relationships that started happening with Ruth's work. He really wants this work to be lit by actual light. And there is some that comes in here. So he's like inviting like this holistic kind of possibility to happen with you in the space asking these questions, right? So you start to hypothesize, I think, with this work and about what's going on, like what is going on here. And I think in that way that this, it acts as a conceptual machine. The thing starts generating. Like, it doesn't have limits now, right? Like, it's gonna, you know, for each person subjectively coming and, like, testing these things, you make, that makes sound. Is that thing and that thing, are they the same materials? When I move far away, this changes, you know, from a fixed cloudscape to an unfixed, weird, pixelized datascape. Like, you start to make inquiry about what that actually, what does that mean, or what is that, what do I take away from that? And then that way, I think that's the thing starts operating as a conceptual machine. So I think the Kamau has set up a scenario where there are clues to things. There are doorways. You know this is a cloudscape. You know that when you move over there, that sound affects this thing. You know that he's pointing to relationships between materials. You know that you see the sun in some way coming through over there. There are all kinds of potential readings of that, right? So, in that way, those are doorways of possibility, right? And so the way that there's paradigms of like knowledge that end up being fixed in science, for example, right? If there's no leaving that paradigm and moving to a place where there's like more paradox, ambiguity, confusion, then like it stops, right? It stays in that paradigm. And I think that there's something about this work to me that is pointing to that, that is leaving like, that is bringing like a certain kinds of objects together to produce ambiguity on purpose, but not inarticulately or arbitrarily, but like with certain types of relationships. Like formally, there's clearly lots of relationships, so that you can start to ask the questions and put hypotheses together about what's happening. So that's how we learn, right? This is how we learn, through inquiry, asking questions, speculating, and then testing things and doing experiments. And I think that this, what happens in here, puts you, it models that. It puts you in a place where you can start to do that. So there's not like a resolve is not what's going on here, or answering those questions. That's not the motivation. The motivation seems to me to be to do the tests and think about the complexity of paradox and ambiguity and our relationship to the universe and that paradox, and ultimately how we learn to expand our consciousness, putting us in a learning mode, like an inquiry mode. Because that's how we're going to learn, right? It's to like not think that things are fixed, not and not to not ask questions and not to do tests and not to experiment and not to push things. So I think the great thing about this work is that it invites you to participate in that process, the process of inquiry, right? And asking big questions. There's, you know, symbolically you can pull that, or you can think of it really in more abstract terms as just like, is this, why, what is the relationship between this thing and this thing material? Are those things alike? Just that very simple process of like trying to determine, is that metal or is that paper? Is that paper or is that metal? That alone, that just that alone is like the beginning of like setting a process of inquiry into place. And that's how we're gonna learn. That's how we learn, and that's how we're gonna learn about how we live, like how we're living here, and hopefully like how we can keep living. So that's my spiel on Kamal's piece here. I'm done. do you ask questions? Yeah, I mean the earth sets the horizon.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean I'm thinking ideologically.
Yeah.
An ideological horizon. Maybe,
right.
You know, we are in between this horizon. Maybe there is something beyond that horizon.
Yeah.
That we don't.
Probably.
I would say, yeah. Even we cannot imagine.
Yeah. Right.
Isn't there a relationship between the sound and this image in particular?
Huh?
Do you know? Is there a relationship between the sound and this image, these images?
I would say yes.
Right. Well, it seems so.
But what do you think?
It would seem so.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially spending a little more time with it.
Yeah. It's almost, I mean, I think it, like, you can imagine all kinds of possibilities, right? Like, this almost can become animated, line by line, in relation to the sound.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely. Yeah.
The fact that it's a drone sort of lends itself to being generative, you know? I mean, that's kind of what drones do. They, like, keep the momentum. And I think there's an implication that this is like, you know, almost being like drawn out or like scan, you know, printed like line by line possible.
Right.
I mean, I don't, I think it's up, there's many possibilities.
Right.
Which is also another interesting connection to that work over there, I think. Yeah. Like, images produced as from a left right one dimensional line.
You seem less related than the other for some reason. I mean, to me, they seem separated somehow from the rest.
Oh, well, this is a different artist.
Oh, this is a
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. So there are, yeah. But there, I mean, I think there's some connections, but it's a different artist. That's Kamal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And do you know the significance of the lines? Is that on the floor? No.
Significance.
The purpose.
Aren't those
relationship to the sound.
That's what I have thought.
My, didn't you listen to anything I said, Robert? Did you not listen to me?
But I see these lines relating a lot to that. Because of the diagonals that are happening when this is kind of lying on the plane and that's questioning the horizon, the landscape, top of
the ground. I see, so you're looking at the whole, your peripheral vision and everything. It's not the piece alone, it's the whole space. I mean,
well, this is my point about, like, you get up close, you move away. When you move away, you walk by that thing and it makes a sound. You look at that and then you look at that. You look at this one, you look at that. You start. The way that it worked for me was coming to these first, trying to decipher, right? Like, is it a cloudscape? Now it's very obvious to me from back there that it is, but when I first came in, I wasn't sure, so I moved closer, and then I asked all those other questions. What is this made out of? Is it a print? Is it a photograph? Is it a house of thing? Is it a painting? It doesn't seem like it's painted. It seems like it's printed. It's flat, but it seems like it's expressionistic at the same time, because, you know, I know how Camaro made these. He went through, like, iteration after iteration of video feedback, and it got it to a point where it's, like, it feels pixelated when you're up close, but it also kind of feels slightly organic, so it was hard at first. So my conjecture, right, is that, like, as you start naturally asking questions about the nature of these, of this particular object especially, like, its thingness, like, what is it? What's it made out of? What's it? What is it supposed to represent? What is it supposed to be telling me? Like, as you do those things, and there's lots of ways in which it's open to doing that, because it's like the way that it's made. One thing is that you move back and forth, and as you move back and forth, you move right through here. Like, you go right, it's right here. If you're here, you go back through here, you go back through this stuff, and then you start picking up these other things. Then you might step on that and it makes a noise, but then you realize, well, there's no wire, does this one? People do this. I've seen them doing it. I did it. So then you're like, well, why? Why is this one, that one is, and this one isn't? So it's all those things start producing questions, which to me is the invitation, you know, right, is like the invitation to,
when you touch yeah. It's a mystery. You're creating a mystery with one.
Yeah.
Sound yeah. Itself too.
But I think that the thing that the point that I'm trying to make is that, like, is more specific than, like, yeah, postmodern subjectivity with a piece of art, right? And then you can find your own meaning in it. So, is that this particular work to me actually, yes, it's open and it's to interpretation, but it's modeling a process of inquiry. And that's something that is, like, that's intersubjective, right? It's like, if you and I, like, everyone, we can all sort of, like, we can all be doing that simultaneously. Whether you're thinking that's not clouds or not, you're thinking, what is that? And you're thinking, how is it made and what does it do? And maybe you move back over there and something else happens. So then, right, you're in this sphere that's modeling inquiry. It's not, it is open, but it's also like there's intent. I mean, specific intent about inquiry and about, like, the space you're in, like, where you are, where, and I think that's part of what this does. Like, it points to, like, thinking about where you are in relation to these objects too, and how you move through here and what happens and what doesn't happen and that kind of stuff. So
no, I'm not challenging. I didn't mean to challenge what you were saying.
I'm only passionate, not offended.